so.
Okay. Now we're back. Stupid thing. I needed to hit it twice.
And we're back.
And you're drinking, we discussed that you're drinking some fine wine.
Some fine wine.
I'm drinking from some fine water.
The finest. Only the finest Brita.
Brita filter.
Yeah.
This is the same one I had down in Riverside. It really brings me back to a good place.
Wasn't that back in your heavy drug use days?
Yeah, it was.
So, that you know, you can revisit those times if you get back into heavy drug use.
Anytime I want, I guess, yeah.
So you're up.
So I'm up. Okay.
Movie 4 for Ian.
Movie 4 for
Memorable
Ian.
Memorable films from 2008.
As of yet. That's true.
Because let's just put this out in the open here. Most of the stuff that comes out that people give a lot of buzz about, it's released in New York and L.A. in the last month of the year, and then it comes out in the rest of the country in January.
Yeah, so, we're getting screwed on Gran Torino. Yeah. And
they screw us at Gran Torino.
Yeah, they do it.
They screw you. Yeah.
They do it again. And, I mean, honestly, I usually don't care too much about the high-end, high-drama stuff for the most part. There's a handful of stuff out that I totally want to make a point of seeing, that I guess I'll just be seeing in January. Okay, I have to come up with a fourth. I'm stalling. I apologize.
You're Joseph Stalling.
I'm Joseph Stalling. I seem to... I did like The Hulk. I just don't know if I feel like I want to make that one of my five. Because it was fun and it was good, but it was just another great comic book movie that was competently put together.
I feel like I should give you the really, really obvious one. You haven't come across it. If you keep fighting... You might think of it.
Did I see it? Are you sure? Because I feel like I slacked on a lot of stuff.
I could have sworn you saw it.
Well, just give it to me.
Maybe you didn't. WALL-E.
Oh, I just saw WALL-E. Okay. And that was what I was debating about.
You want to do WALL-E?
Yeah, we can.
Okay.
Let's do WALL-E. Let's do it left and right. Yeah.
Let's do WALL-E till he's sick.
Well, naturally, I was viewing WALL-E with the predisposition that it was supposed to be ostensibly more mature than The Dark Knight, thematically. I'd heard the first 25 minutes are like no kid's movie you'll ever see. Yeah. And for the most part, that's true. I think I viewed it with way too critical of an eye. And now I'm trying to sort of backpedal on my initial criticism of it. Because basically what it is he's the last one of these junk robots, right?
Right.
On an Earth that's been abandoned for 700 years. Right. And so you assume he's 700 years old. He's just been repairing himself this whole time.
Right.
And, I guess in that 700 years, he's evolved, and that's why he has a house with stuff he likes. He's characterized in a way that is not consistent with any kind of understanding of low-level artificial intelligence for utilitarian robots, which, I mean, is not... I mean, you know, maybe who gives a shit because it's a cartoon for kids,
right.
But Pixar always does that higher-end thing where their stuff just... It reads better...
Right.
And so I think it's open to criticisms of a certain type, you know, like Ratatouille, it's about a rat in a kitchen, but the motivations, honestly, if it wasn't a rat, if it wasn't a talking rat, it was just a person, it would have been a fantastic, like, you know, slice of life film.
Right.
And so in this one, it's...
Would have been something that Stanley Tucci would have directed.
No, because it was good. I mean, there's just a couple.
Because it was good.
I'm not saying. I don't really think I've seen anything.
Let me say here, you are biased towards Brad Bird.
I've seen parts of.
I like Stanton a lot. Andrew Stanton.
I've only seen WALL-E that was Stanton. Okay. I think Stanton's got a good eye. I do. Maybe he's just more kiddie because this movie is definitely it's dark in some places, and I like that, but it's. I don't know. It's like it's trying to be critical, but it doesn't do it enough to work for me in some places. I really like the way it starts with the Hello Dolly music and the Earth, and the, you know, the solar system that comes down on Earth and shows how dismal it is, and it sort of got that whole juxtaposition of Doctor Strangelove kind of thing where it's like old timey happy music while you show the desolate terrible
world. It looks brilliant.
And then you know brilliant. Then it brings the title card up and then the music totally gets seriously like somber. Not even somber, but like bleak.
Yeah.
And it's just this lone robot driving around. You see the corpses of other hymns and stuff everywhere. Right. And that's really kind of cool. But I don't know, just that they basically, I guess I felt it was just more of the same sort of little kid stuff. They turned the robot into like a goofy little thing. And I wanted something else from it. I wanted
companionship.
And then he gets companionship, and he wants love and all this other stuff.
He just wants companionship.
Seem consistent with
and he specifically wants the companionship of the one that he's...
Yeah.
Because...
It's the first one he ever saw.
Well, it's not just that. He's... I think they did it in a good way. There's no explanation as to how a robot could have done this, like you just mentioned. But it's not like he was just yearning for companionship. He was watching Hello, Dolly, and he watched the interaction. He has no interaction with anything except for a bug, right?
A cockroach. Which so, it survives being run over like multiple times.
It's a cockroach. That's the joke. Get it?
Yeah.
So and it was eating Twinkies, remember?
Yeah.
Those are the two things
that survived. And he knew to bring the Twinkie home every day and call it in when the sandstorms come.
The Twinkie's the one to survive.
Yeah.
but it's the fact that he presumably had interaction with humans as they were leaving. He presumably had all this interaction with the other robots and things like that.
And then as they all slowly
die off. And assuming they have some sort of AI in them, he is missing that because he's probably programmed to interact with other things. So I think it's completely plausible, and I think that was brilliantly done. Like, you give someone a simple goal like that, you know, he wants companionship, and he specifically wants the kind he's seeing on this thing that he's grown accustomed to watching every night because it's the one thing he can watch.
Yeah.
And
he records the parts that he likes.
Yes. And so he can listen to him when he wants to. You feel this robot, you know, there's pathos with this robot.
Oh, absolutely, you know? There is. And it's weird because I don't know how you would do it to make me happy because, honestly, like...
And then the girl robot shows up and giggles.
Like, what did they? Why would they program a probe robot to giggle? Right. Why would it be anything other than that thing from Empire Strikes Back?
That character is the weak link in the story because
I mean it's so much it's more not, characterized.
It's flat.
Yeah,
the Eve character is flat.
I didn't think it was flat. I just thought it was
well,
just
it, it,
didn't
well it
wasn't
okay,
consistent
in terms of like actual story you know storyboarding all that stuff screenwriting. It changes from gruff and not just dismissive, but goal-minded from its thing to...
Directive.
From its directive to open to this thing that... I mean, that was the thing that was so brilliant about the film was that this robot who has had this time to mull over the intricacies of loneliness and all that stuff and so enjoys the company of others, no matter what they be, human, whatever... Every single, we mentioned this in our review, every single person, robot, anything that Wally comes in contact with changes.
Because of being in contact. Then.
Because
when he waves at the thing.
Not just that, but he makes the two humans that notice what's going on and drop off their little things and try to walk and talk to each other and stuff like that, and the captain played by Jeff Garland and all that stuff. All the robots that learn to wave, everything like that is because... It's because he's had a different experience than all the rest of them. They've just been going on their usual thing and
humdrum.
And I just thought that was just beautifully done the way they did that. The great thing that these Pixar films have been able to do, and I'm lumping a bunch of them together here, is you take something relatively trite, and just by putting it through a different filter, which is the animation. So you're expecting less from it because it's animation. You're expecting something more basic.
But at this point, Pixar is starting to not have that anymore.
It is, but you're still expecting something that is going to be completely accessible to kids. That's the main thing there.
Yeah.
It's completely accessible to kids. Even the Incredibles, which along with Brad Bird's thing,
I think the Incredibles is probably the darkest.
It's
Pixar
definitely the darkest
film.
Pixar. Yeah. Iron Giant is absolutely brilliant.
That's not Pixar.
I know,
and that would be darker.
It's definitely darker than Incredibles. And it's that also has a feeling of that has nothing to do with Stamp. It has a feeling of loneliness in it too. It's mm-hmm. set and it's like this isolationist woods type area. But,
yeah.
The darkness and stuff like that still comes out of a very very simple themes. There's nothing complex mm-hmm. in them. The beauty of them and the brilliance of them is the simplicity. And you can't get that if you just make it as if they tried to shoot not the Iron Giant that would probably be a cool actual film. You try to shoot The Incredibles as just a live-action thing, it would mm-hmm. be interesting. But you know, because it's animation, it's noteworthy.
Yeah.
Wall-E would be interesting. It's about a robot. It would still be a kid's movie.
It would have to be different.
It would be like Short Circuit, kind of.
Yeah, but you could do like a post-apocalyptic, which is what it is. It's
yeah,
a post-apocalyptic.
Totally.
And that's the thing I like.
It's a friendly post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, which is kind of bullshit, because it's really saying all this stuff about consumption and
yeah,
corporate
right.
culture
yeah.
and... everyone's sitting on a chair their whole lives and never doing anything on their own, and then they finally, I mean, and,
but because they
I mean, the credit sequence was great. I love the credit sequence with the actual. I love how they always do 2D animation for their credit sequences. Yes. They always, it's like they remember, you know, they remember. Mm-hmm. Oh, remember all these awesome things that are
speaking of that
cool artistry. And then they did like the 8-bit graphics.
Right. Too. Speaking of that, the just getting on a really quick tangent here, the side deal, Kung Fu Panda is a pretty rote kind of standard, you know, thing. It was
I usually judge it based on how many celebrity voices are in it.
The opening credit thing was awesome. It was incredible. It looked like a Samurai Jack-ish type. It was 2D animation. It was just awesome. It was incredible. Like, really cool, really kind of violent.
I'll have to check it out.
It was cool just for that. And then the rest of the movie, because like, that's like his dream. He's dreaming that. And just because of that, you care about his character because he just wants some, he wants to fight some
ninjas. He wants to kick ass, basically. Take names, and that's who doesn't want to fight ninjas?
Well, hey, this panda does. That's for
and
sure.
And Speed Racer does, and everybody does.
And I just
that part with the ninjas was awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was so cool.
Oh man!
In the hotel
with the like, cool cityscape. And oh man, there needs to be a obligatory ninja hotel cityscape fight in any action movie made by people that are that know what to do with that.
More importantly, it dragged John Goodman out of my the depths of my mind has King Ralph in it.
Uh huh.
And it pulled him out of that and back up into like the Barton Fink area.
Oh yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Where he just like flipped a couple of those guys and stuff. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. So good back to Wally. Anything else you
have to say? I don't know. It really, there was like a certain kind of, like you said, the loneliness and stuff. It really kind of like, I felt kind of emotionally drained watching through the movie. Because
a good movie should emotionally
drain. This poor robot gets the shit beaten out of him at the end. Like really, it's kind of brutal the way he gets like electrocuted and gets crushed and stuff. And
you know what? Pixar has done that though, because in the Toy Story movies, the first Toy Story...
I've never seen the Toy Story
movies. Okay, the first Toy Story has some...
A couple of toys get not eaten just by a dog.
There's the next door neighbor has this dog, and he's this brutal sadist of a kid who blows dolls and toys up with, like, M80s and stuff. And it is absolutely frightening. It actually is, for, like, something that's soaking on.
Well, once they put character, once they like put, like, you know... Would you personify?
They torture like some of the main characters and stuff. Like Pixar has been putting more adult stuff into these back like old Disney movies used to.
Mm-hmm.
Like
a little bit.
Snow White was dark and frightening. Sleeping Beauty was absolutely terrifying.
A little bit of the grim stuff. Yeah,
you gotta put that stuff back.
Dragon was scary.
Yeah, you gotta put that stuff back in. It can't be all the Jungle Book.
And so I mean, the point where. Like, the weird relationship between the robots almost kind of worked because she's all dismissive and whatever. And then when she sort of scans his memory and she sees how he spent the whole time with, getting electrocuted and he kept her dry and everything. Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know, that really kind of worked.
Yeah, totally.
I just, at a certain point when it ended and, you know, the humans show up. First of all, 80% of those people should have just died of a heart attack immediately.
Right.
That, I would have preferred
it's
that.
It's the future. They got beta blockers, I'm telling you.
I'm sure they do. They can be nothing but gelatinous.
Just like the Star Wars past and slash future.
They can walk and then, and everything, and survive. Yeah, right. Rather than the Jesus thing, where he's resurrected, I would have preferred him to not remember. He turns over at one
That's
point.
That's cold, dude. You can't do that to kids.
No, that would be a great lesson to kids. Oh, and the cockroach dies when he runs it over. I would have had the cockroach. I would have had him not remember, roll off, kill the cockroach, and just kind of go back to doing what he does.
You're in the pro Bambi camp.
You need to do that.
A smattering of life lessons in there.
It would have been like
a gestalt.
It would have made it a lot better movie because it's just like that whole like. Sadness would have just been it's a good way to end the movie. I don't know. I think I like movies. I remember movies and I remember things that have a certain kind of sadness to them rather than doing that and then solving it at the last minute. You know what I mean? Right. That's very insincere almost.
It's insincere, but it's popcorn movie making.
I would have preferred that he didn't come back.
That's why the Lethal Weapon series lives on, because they
didn't kill
the plug
Riggs.
The Riggs death that was Shane Black's.
Well, yeah, but that felt like it came out of nowhere. Really, they didn't earn Riggs dying in the second one, other than the fact that he got shot with like a 100+
year old died. But hey, you know what? The healing power of laughter. Uh-huh. That's kind of what the point of that movie was, I think.
Yeah,
friendship, laughter, etc. Now he's got the will to live,
and these things will kill you.
repeatedly. The series became completely uninteresting after Riggs no longer had a reason to be suicidal, I think.
Kind of.
Like, what's the point to it at that point? You know, he's not a lethal weapon anymore.
No, that's true. Once he gets too old, yeah.
A lethal weapon is the guy without anything to lose. Now he's got something to lose. He's got his buddies.
Crazy.
He's crazy. He's all curly on him.
So, yeah, I don't know. I liked it. Well, that was the other one I would have liked to have seen at the theater, I think, because it would have looked...
Yeah, they
looked... The part when they're spiraling around out of space would look really cool impressive. And very interesting. I just feel like what it's trying to do thematically, it kind of, it kind of half-assed it, you know? Like, it kind of tried to be critical of overconsumption in all things.
Right.
But at the same time, but then even an interview with, was his name, Stanton?
Yeah.
Stanton kind of, like, you know, pretended that that wasn't an issue. It's like, well, no, I read, you know, in space, people would start to look like babies because there's no gravity and they wouldn't be able to exercise. And it's like, okay. And then, like, the fact that, like, they made the people just so stupid and unsympathetic, really.
Well, you know what?
I mean, the captain doesn't even know what dancing is. The captain doesn't know, like, what basic things
are. That's cool, though. That's fun stuff. Because if they knew stuff like that, it would take a lot of the intrigue out of the human situation.
I guess.
And... you know, like, in a very savior-like way, while he kind of teaches them humanity again, or whatever,
exactly.
You know, yada yada. But I mean, that's what you have to do in a movie like that, you know? A Disney movie, especially, or Pixar, or whatever you want to say this is, has to have the elements of a massive, epic thing. You know, it has to have that. It can't be something small and non-life-changing.
Unlike Ratatouille, which is very small, actually.
But it's life-changing for everyone involved.
Yeah, that's usually the case.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And it's usually all good, which is why if they had just gone there with Wally and just had him not come back to normal, it would have been... everyone else's life was changed. He saved everybody else.
It's touching, though, that he comes back the way he does, because she's holding his hand.
No, that's stupid.
She / it. They don't have genitalia.
They don't.
They should. They should have shown her little in spot.
Yeah.
Her drive.
Mm-hmm.
And his...
her port and his...
his... protuberance.
His prong, yeah.
His prong.
Port in the prong.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's awful.
And they could have...
Yeah.
Some Wally porn.
Uh-huh.
Rule 34, it's out there.
Oh my God.
Somebody's done it. It's Rule 34.
Oh.
They got Rule 34, that's for sure. Okay, let's say you're done with Wally.
I figure I am.
I want to preface the last two here that I'm going to do by... well, I don't know if my last one's going to make it, because you might pick it. I don't even know what it is, honestly, yet. I was just saying that to make you feel nervous. I know what my next one's going to be. But
okay.
I have seen a handful of the ones that are thrown into the back of the year that are trying to be Oscar-ish, award-ish deals. For instance, Blindness, etc.
Yeah.
They're noteworthy. They're interesting. But I think the things that come out... you know, we've talked about this before. Comedies get a bad rap around award time.
Mm-hmm.
Things that try to do things that haven't been done before, and or rehash a good old genre that's not been around for a while, are very noteworthy to me and interesting. I'm going to remember Pineapple Express much more than I remember Blindness years down the road. I'm going to go ahead and throw that in there right now. Pineapple Express.
That's your four?
That's going to be my four.
These are... I'm going to say that these... for me, these are no order.
They're not in order.
They're just an order of my memory.
The only order I really have in here is that Dark Knight was by far the best thing I've seen this year.
I would concur.
Okay, so... Pineapple Express had something in common with Burn After Reading for me, just in terms of the characters, because aside from Seth Rogen, who I'm starting to hate...
yeah, I think everyone's
aside from him because no matter how dumb he always comes across as, he's still you can tell he's condescending about everything. I don't like that. I really don't like it. The Franco character is fantastic. The McBride character is brilliant.
Oh, I think that's the parts I remember.
I loved Gary Cole's Osman because in the previews it looks like he's just some kind of like hard ass drug dealer guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's stupid. He's pretty stupid.
You keeping up on Entourage? Season 5 just ended. Gary Cole's in it.
Yeah, what does he play?
He's they're getting him and Ari were like coming up together,
mm-hmm.
and he ended up being like in the valley doing like literary stuff. Right. And Ari felt bad, like, you know, it was kind of like a twist of fate.
Like one of them
went good, and one of them went, like, okay. He does well, but he's not, like, in the big leagues.
He's a lit agent.
And so, so Ari's kind of staking a bunch of his own situation to bring him into it, to make him another agent like him. So next season,
Gary Cole.
I love Gary Cole.
He's great.
He's a Birdman, man.
Even without the Birdman,
He was just on an episode of Chuck. He plays the blonde woman's dad. He's a con artist.
There's something about his face and his voice, and I've read
and he was the vice president on the last season of The West Wing.
Oh, that's great. The AV Club. I don't know if you go there.
If I did, I would go there all the
time.
They
do this thing called random roles, which they grab an actor and then they started it by doing a thing called random songs, I think, where you get musicians. And you have them put their iPod on shuffle, and then they talk about the first 10 songs that come up randomly and why it's
important. I would spend all day on that.
It's awesome. It's really cool. Yeah. So they do this thing called random roles it's not really random. They pick 10 roles the person has done beforehand or whatever, and they bring them up. A lot of times the actors won't remember them, and they start getting all, like, emotional about it, like, oh my gosh, I can't. One of the greatest things was Ray Wise. You know Ray Wise? Laura Palmer's dad from
Twin Peaks. Oh, the crazy ad guy.
Yeah, he's the devil in that show on the CW.
That's Ray Wise.
He's awesome. Yeah. That guy's sweet.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
So they did a thing with him. He was on Tim and Eric, where he played this guy who...
I remember vaguely.
They did an infomercial thing about different types of hugs, and what's appropriate for the workplace.
That's right.
And they asked him about that. They're like, they brought that rule up, and he goes, what was that again? And they're like, this thing. He was like, what is that? I don't know what you're talking about. And they're like, well, you just did it like 4 months ago. He's like... Really? And they're like, yeah, the thing about the workplace hugs. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, my agent said that it would be good for me to do that. He's like, I never saw it. Is it funny? And they're like, yeah, you were great. He's like, oh, cool. You know, like...
I get the feeling that that's what a lot of those people...
Yeah, I think mostly.
I don't know.
Some of them, I guess, knew their comedy before. Goldblum is a huge fan of theirs. Okay. He's been in a bunch of things they've done.
Yeah.
The Gary Cole thing, like... He's very serious about all this stuff, and he's very serious about the artistry of everything he does. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, Brady Bunch movie. And he's like, well, I wanted to, you know, get it, but he was never like condescending about it, like a Shia LaBeouf was or something like that, or Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Oh my gosh, those guys talked like they were. Both of them talked like they were Laurence Olivier.
Maybe they're just a, because they're young, they feel like they got something to prove, and they can't help it.
They come across as just hateful people.
Really?
And Gary Cole was like...
I saw, what's his name, the buff on Conan like 2 years ago, and he seemed pretty funny.
Every time he's on Conan, you know, he's hilarious. What he said in his AV Club interview was that every time you see me in an interview on TV, that's a persona I've made to make people like me. He's like, I'm nothing like that. He says that all the time in written interviews.
Okay. But the written interview persona is not...
He said that too. He's like, this is a persona I have as well. He's like, I'm protecting myself from all...
He's like, I'm doing the pretentious dick thing for the written interviews.
Jackass, totally.
Well, Tim and Eric did too, and the AV guys absolutely. bring it out in them.
They might. Some people are... you heard of the Eagles of Death Metal?
I've heard that's a band.
It's
right?
a band, yeah. Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age is the
drummer.
Is the
right?
drummer for them. Yeah. And this other guy, I forget the other guy's name, but he's the main guy. Mm-hmm. They did an interview with him recently, and as the interview started, the guy claimed that he was taking acid, he was doing acid and he was smoking weed at the same time. He was like, he letting people know that he was doing this, and he said where he got the acid from. It was from this chem student at UCLA who he heard was doing had a meth lab or something like that, or he was smoking meth or something like that. And his interview was like so, like, he was so fun loving and like full of joy and like how awesome everything was, probably because of the drugs. I don't know.
If he was actually doing it.
But yes, you know, some people come across as, you know, I forget. Oh, we're getting into Gary Cole here. But what's great about him is that usually actors who are in a lot of comedies will tell you they're not taking things too seriously, and they, you know, they have to have this, they have to tell you that they're not trying to win awards and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're having fun with this and they feel really lucky and blessed. But he comes across as someone who takes his job very seriously and
professional.
He took Birdman very seriously, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, but he's also very kind of like meek about it, like, you know, like, I hope I did a good job,
and modest,
I wanted to. Just, you know,
no, he seems cool. Did they talk about Crusade, the Babylon 5 spinoff show that he was on?
I don't.
He was the captain.
I don't remember.
He was good in that show. He's good in everything. I've never seen the Brady Bunch movies, but
they're
I
funny
would probably,
because
probably like him.
He doesn't seem anything like the dad Brady.
Yeah.
He just seems like Gary Cole.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's like, but they are funny because they're just, they're pretty retarded. Yeah. They're basically like Wayne's World type movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're talking about Pineapple Express here. So,
Birdman!
Yeah. The characters in Pineapple Express, being so stupid or great, it has the really, as cool as any sort of violence is in anything, as much as I love it, it really is very disturbing to watch violence, serious violence in a comedy. Well, and this movie has it.
It's all context. It's all, which is what, absolutely. I love that stuff. I love, like, I'm watching this anime now where it's, like, really stupid at the beginning. Like, they essentially broke the second season into 12 stupid episodes, and then the beginning of, like, the next episode after those stupid episodes is, like, hardcore military people with their throats getting slit and shit. Oh, and wow. It's like, this is the same world.
Wow.
And I almost prefer that because it's, I don't know, I love the switches in context. Like, right. Like Cowboy Bebop does that too, you know, where it's like kind of dumb. I mean, the first episode was pretty hardcore,
right.
But then, you know, it's kind of like about a dog, and then they're at a casino, it's goofy, and then all of a sudden they shoot somebody.
It was
all
tonally consistent, though. Yeah. It was tonally consistent. That was just the perfect.
Yeah, and sometimes I think I agree with you. Some of those comedies, they just all of a sudden do that tone. They do it in some of those Robin Williams movies.
Pineapple Express and Tropic Thunder both did this, where there's. Yeah. Tropic Thunder's was more in jest because the few times there were violence, it was either because they were filming a movie or it was just there to shock you completely. Like, yeah. The director
Steve Coogan explodes. Yeah.
Which was very cool. I like that. But
they pick up his head and they're like, this is just jelly.
Yeah, right. Right. In Pineapple Express, though, it's like people that you grow to like. The guy who was in Zack and Mary Quick Porn, the black guy. Craig Robinson. You kind of get to like his character. But he gets totally messed up, and then he gets his foot shot off. Yeah, and then he gets, no, not just that, but he gets his foot shot off after he's killed.
By the Daiwu.
But you just got killed by a Daiwu Lano. Yeah, that, I love that. I love it. It's great. But what's funny is that he's a character you're starting to like, and they even gave that character, and the guy who used to be in all those indie films with the unibrow, what's his name?
Yeah, I don't know that guy.
Yeah, so they kind of give them their own little, like, storylines and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. The guy's like, listen, like, my wife doesn't like doing all this gangster stuff. Yeah. I gotta get home. And the other guy, and then Robinson feels, like, betrayed by his partner because...
We're in
this gangster lifestyle. You can't just leave me like this, you know? Like, what do I have to do except for, like, I have this camaraderie. What do I have besides that, you know? And... Then besides that, like, that's almost like a buddy cop thing, mm-hmm. right there. But they're the bad guys, and you're supposed to want them to die, but you don't really want to.
No.
And so then when they do...
In a comedy, you never really want the bad guys to... You just want them to get caught. You want them to
They generally do.
You want them to end up in a side
act situation.
Gary Cole
was pretty funny in this. He was very inept. And then he has this very inept comedic fight where nobody can really punch each other quite correctly,
uh-huh.
with Rogan at the end. And then he gets blown up, and his rib cage is shredded, and he looks all disgusting, like... And Rogan's like, oh, like, I didn't really think that was going to happen to him, you know? Like,
but yeah, I didn't expect that.
And this movie also plays on the kind of burn-after-reading sensibilities where, like, they make fun of the movie you just watched at the end of it.
Yeah.
They make fun of it. Like, I can't believe we all survived this. This was amazing. And the McBride character is absolute comic gold just because even if what doesn't happen to him didn't happen to him, he's just funny because he's continually being as friendly as possible with these guys. He wants to be friends with them, and then backstabbing him as soon as possible to save his own neck, and just at the drop of a hat, and then immediately apologizing.
Yeah.
When he got shot by not Craig Robinson, the other guy, when he's sitting in the chair, he's like, "How are you gonna do this to me? I invited you over for dinner a couple weeks ago. We had what did he say? They had fish. What did he say?
We had lasagna.
You know, I mean, this is in the." In this latter 2000s time right now, comedy is mostly improv. Most of these people coming out...
Well, they're working off, like, The Office and stuff.
It's not just The Office. It's coming from the Will Ferrell thing.
Oh, okay. It probably is more so.
It's a Groundlings type thing where they're all people that came from improv. Mm-hmm. Most of these comedians are people who came from improv now. They're not stand-up comics. They're improv people. That's the way that the trend has been going.
Mm-hmm.
So... A lot of the lines you're getting that you're giggling at, the Judd Apatow type stuff, is stuff that they were saying off the cuff that the crew was probably giggling at also because it's completely
like the Rancor line in
exactly. Danny McBride stuff. If you've seen the the special features for Hot Rod, you'll see that almost every single line where Danny McBride says something funny, they have taped 7 or 8 different versions of him just saying crazy stuff, and you hear the crew going, like, just busting up because you don't know what he's going to say. And he just says, he says things that aren't even funny, but his delivery is like, he's just so serious and like telling you how badass he is when he's telling you that, you know, whatever it was. And I think that maybe this year was the last time that that stuff's going to be that funny. I enjoyed Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I was going to say that as my fifth.
I'm sorry. No, you can still do it. I'm not.
No, let's just talk about it. That's my fifth. That's your go-to easy one.
It kind of flows into this
guilty pleasure. I like the loser guy trying to find love kind of thing. That works.
And you can't really tell which comedy is scripted and which bits are scripted.
I think a lot of it is written. I mean, people used to always say it about Woody Allen stuff, like, and he's like, no, like, you know, everything is written.
Woody Allen is meticulous.
The ums and ohs and everything else.
Woody Allen would write every single inflection in someone's speech into the script. Yeah, his scripts are crazy. They're like 200 pages long for like a 2-hour movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like in Sarah Marshall, I don't know. I like that it went to. Like, the whole movie takes place, like, on vacation.
Yeah.
And so it kind of gives an excuse for it to be fun and whatever. And I like this job was making the dun-dun, you know, Law and Order sounds and stuff. There was a couple of things that were just, like, seemed so obvious to do a joke on.
Right.
And, like, the fact, like, you're a composer for the dun-dun. Really? That's all you do all day and you get paid for that? Okay.
See, that's how you make a good one of these, is you put stuff like that in there as premises. And you have your basic through line. And then the rest of it, generally, is you get improv comedians, or in this case, Russell Brand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You throw them into this thing, and you say, here's your basic, you know, it's just a dialogue.
It's like a handful of bit parts, really, is all you're doing. You Paul Rudd is the surfer.
The weak link in it is one of the people who's been doing it as long as anyone now, even though he's so young, is Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He just says, inappropriate things, he swears, but he's like very earnest all the time, you know?
I still think that his part in 40 Year Old Virgin is one of the funniest parts.
His part in 40 Year Old Virgin is hilarious. Absolutely.
I'll just give you the money and I'll take the thing.
And
how about that?
Yeah. She's like, no, you don't get, like, What's funny is that you see his point while he's saying it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make any sense what she does.
It doesn't make any
sense. She's like, I understand this doesn't make sense, but I can't. It's not how it works.
Yeah, you know. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I forgot he was even in that movie. He had a couple good parts, but yeah, I don't know. I think
he just had those lines that would have been funny when you first knew that was the type of person he would say something like that. Like, there was the part where someone insists that Russell Brand does an impromptu performance of something, and he's standing there next to Jason, whatever his name is, and Siegel, and he goes, I just went from 6 o'clock to noon or something like that. Like, you know he's talking about his dick, but. And that's normally something to be funny, but you just expect him to say stuff like that.
You're kind of sick of it.
Yeah.
I get you.
Superbad was kind of the breaking point with me for him, because it was a great movie. I've reached a critical backlash now with Jonah Hill and...
And Rogan.
And, no, not Rogan. Rogan especially, but Jonah Hill and Michael Cera. Michael Cera, I'm sorry. He just does...
Well, did you see the playlist one?
I didn't see it.
Well, how could you really have
the book? I know what happens in the book. They say it's basically the same.
Wait, it's actually based on a book.
It's a book. It's a novel.
And you read the book?
Yeah.
About a couple of hipsters driving around New York one night.
It's definitely like a rated.
Why would you? Why would you have read that book? That doesn't seem like the sort of thing you would read.
I read a lot of stuff.
Okay.
Well,
I'm just sort of saying. Well, really, the backlight. Okay, he was George Michael in.
And now he's always George Michael.
He's always Did you even see? Did you see Juno?
No,
I didn't see Juno. I'm saying, I think... Are you getting a critical back? Because you've seen the trailers?
Yeah. No, I've seen two things he's done where he plays exactly the same. Sean Connery played the same guy all the time, but it was never overbearing.
Yeah, that's true.
When your shtick is all you have, and you just do your shtick every time, that's fine. Sean Connery has an accent because he's from Scotland. Mm-hmm. That's why he has the accent. That's his shtick. Mm-hmm. That's it. Otherwise, he plays the role he's supposed to play.
That accent, however, can read as Russian and Egyptian. Let's not forget that it can read as Egyptian.
Yeah, you're right.
Was he Spanish in Highlander?
He was...
Ramirez. That would be Spanish. But didn't he say something about Egypt?
He said he was from Egypt, yeah. I don't know. It didn't make sense. He might have taken the name Ramirez.
At some point. See, now they should do
a funny story about Sean Ramirez. He's always playing someone from, like, an Arab country or something like that, just because he happens to be a tan Scot. That's the ridiculous thing.
He's probably just a tan Scot because he's an actor.
I mean, George Clooney, when he gets older, is going to play nothing but Arab characters. I guarantee it, because he's got dark skin. He's got an olive.
And collection. He'll want to do all kinds of political movies too, probably at that point.
He's got a sense of humor, though.
Yeah, I know.
He really does. He for
smug alert aside, he does have a sense of humor.
He liked it.
I wouldn't doubt he enjoyed it. Yeah, like, I'm sure he has.
He liked
to.
That they called him on that.
Yeah.
Because he has his political convictions, yeah. That's fine. I mean, he spoke them out. I don't really agree with that much. And they made fun of him. He was like, that's pretty cool. I mean, he got them their jobs, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's what I loved about it, was that they bit the hand that fed him right there.
Because they don't care.
That is great that they don't care. Yeah. That was a good movie, too, that Leatherhead. I think it was all right.
They're trying to have people. I think they're trying to have Comedy Central or anyone else have a reason to get them off the air.
Because they just don't want
to. Because Trey Parker sounds miserable when he talks about the show.
No, I read those interviews. I always read the South Park interviews. Yeah. They always sound miserable about the production schedule and everything.
Matt Stone doesn't. He doesn't do any work.
But it's always like this, like, yeah, but it beats working for a living.
Oh, totally.
So yeah. I think they still, and they're only doing it as long as, like, I mean, they're contractually obligated to do it.
Gotta, renewed through like 2013 or something like that.
It's one of those things where it's like a lot of times the process of production, and I can talk about this a little because I've been involved in a few productions and I'm going to be involved in another one here pretty soon, is honestly kind of miserable, but it's kind of like a weird, fun, miserable, controlled chaos thing. And it does beat working for a living, honestly. Yeah. So
you get to see the results of your work.
It's like, yeah, you do. And so I think just in all the interviews I've heard with them, It's like a scary anxiety, misery, but they pull it off. And, you know, like any artist, they're going to be unhappy with a handful of them. They're going to be pissed that they did this and, you know, they ran out of ideas and then, well, fuck it. We had to, you know, this is a C-level story. And, you know, it's possible. I was pretty underwhelmed with this last season. So we'll see. They did a lot more two-parters and stuff.
Well. Yeah. I really enjoyed the guinea pig thing for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know why. I kind of wanted to do that, but at the same time, I was like, I don't know. I wanted something else. There was one really good one this season, though. I'm trying to remember. I don't know. Maybe not. Gosh, what were we talking about? We just did Sarah Marshall as my fifth, I guess. And I mean, I don't know. It was straightforward.
What about the characters that you like?
Well, it's like, it honestly, it was like a sitcom. Basically, it's like, except instead of the pretense that this guy also works at the hotel, it's like there's just these different characters that kind of come in and out. I liked it for the most part, even though the guy was kind of bitter. He wasn't even really that bitter. He was just kind of loserish and whatever.
Right.
Everyone was kind of human and normal to each other, nice to each other. And it could have just been the Hawaiian setting and the fact that, like, if half of them, like, are employees, they have to be nice. But it kind of felt like, I don't know, it felt like a romanticization of the real world. Like, I wouldn't think if I just all of a sudden decided to go to Hawaii tomorrow, I would have as good a time as this guy did in real life. But it just, you know, the idea of that seemed kind of fun. And there was funny enough parts. And you kind of, the idea that he wanted to do something so ridiculous as do, like, a Muppet musical about Dracula, a puppet musical about Dracula, the sadness and loneliness of being Dracula, to me just felt like, I don't know. It was refreshing that, because real people like to do things that they like to do. You know, I'm that way. I mean, I'm not, the things I like, the kinds of stupid stuff that I like to do or would want to do with my life is not anything I would like, you know, it wouldn't get me chicks. You know, I usually have to, when girls, you know, say things like, why do you like doing this? Why do you like doing this? It's like, I like doing that. Like, I've got to come to the point in my life where I don't want to apologize for the things I like or don't like, you know? Right. The stupid music and the stupid cartoons I like and all the other crap that I like. And
you shouldn't have to apologize for it.
No, you shouldn't. And, you know, you shouldn't have to justify it or anything. And so the fact that he gets it together and he puts out his little thing, I don't know, I just, like I said, my guilty pleasure is the loser guy that figures things out and solves his problems and gets up finally. And
I'll tell you what I think the key was to this being as enjoyable as the past Apatow produced stuff, and I think a little bit more than some of the more recent ones, was that the main character, instead of being Seth Rogen or a Seth Rogen alike, is a very human, likable.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, here's the thing about Jason Segel. He's not really, I understand that he comes from a comic background. He's not a comedian. This guy's not a comedian. He's an actor. He was, you know, he came up through the Apatow ranks, but a lot of those people were just actors. They weren't comedians and stuff like that. He's on a sitcom now, but people who are on sitcoms are generally not comedians unless they're Ray Romano and his ilk.
That's true. He's on that sitcom, huh?
He's on How I Married Your Mother. How I Met Your Mother, yeah. He is...
That's so weird.
He comes across... And the greatest thing in it is that the Seth Rogen type is always... It's the lovable loser who's also condescending because everyone around him is even dumber than him because he associates with really dumb people. Mm-hmm. The Jason Segel is someone who...
He's almost like the dumb guy.
Dumb guy. Yeah.
So he's not.
But he's not stupid. But he's the dumb guy who here's the thing that differentiates the Seth Rogen character from like all his roommates in Knocked Up, for instance. Mm-hmm. He's the one who seems to have an inkling of the idea that when they're all doing that, they want to do that website that's basically Mr. Skin.
That's a joke.
That's a joke, kind of, to him. And he's just kind of finding a way to bide time and not grow up. Mm-hmm. You know, that's his deal. So when the rest of them freak out, they're actually stunned and they're pissed and they're furious because they're stupid. Mm-hmm. Seth Rogen is, in his own kind of like way, is kind of showing you that my character is not stupid. You know, I'm just buried under years of pot smoke and stuff like that. I have the propensity to grow up.
I just need to wake up and go get a job.
And drop my friends and get a job and
exercise and lose 10 pounds and everything gets better. Yeah. Which is kind of how the end of Sarah Marshall goes. But
it is kind of. But
I forget, did he smoke weed in that movie? I don't remember. Like, I know he loved the cereal in the giant bowl.
I don't recall, yeah.
And,
all I know is that he's pathetic. That's the difference. Yeah. Is that Rogan's roommates in Knocked Up are pathetic because they earnestly believe whatever they're doing and they're trying to get it, but they're just stupid. They're dumbasses. Mm-hmm. They're high. You know, they're sidetracked by petty things.
Yeah.
In freaking Sarah Marshall, he's a regular guy who's sidetracked by all those petty things, and he earnestly loves this girl. She breaks his heart. It's real to him. He earnestly wants to do this stupid thing with his life, even though he's got this pretty cushy thing going on.
The show gets canceled, though. So
yeah, the show gets canceled. But you never get the sense that he enjoys doing what he's doing, though.
Well, no composer would enjoy going dun dun.
If you're getting a paycheck for doing something like that, and you get to tell people you could, though.
I'm sure he loves the fact that he gets the paycheck.
That's better than
and then he goes out and gets Tail with Bill Hader and stuff. Yeah. Who was good in that? I liked him in that.
Yeah.
Rick Fox was in it real quick. Have you seen that his comedy, like a comedy section? He's the sound engineer.
Okay.
And he doesn't do anything all that funny in the movie.
Rick Fox?
I think that's his name.
Are you talking about like the Lakers?
Rick Fox? Maybe it's Kirk Fox.
Okay.
Kirk, I think. He was just on Leno recently. All right. He's pretty funny. He's got kind of a certain kind of delivery. You might not care for it, but I don't know. It just
Hader had scene stealing parts in Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
And
was he in Pineapple Express?
The guy in the beginning, set in the 1940s, where he was testing the marijuana.
Oh, that's right.
Just went off on the general and stuff. And then he has this really brief, like, 1 minute scene with Katherine Heigl or whatever her name is. Heigl, what's her name?
Heigl.
What's her first name?
Katherine.
Is it Katherine?
Yeah, Katherine Heigl. Don't you watch Grey's?
I don't watch Grey's. I know she's got a nice rack. He's in
the
one part where
he's
on the phone with the person where she's like throwing up, and he keeps saying, "I think she's pregnant." he was very funny, and
he was like the camera operator or something.
He was an editor or something like that. And actually, another person who was very funny in that and I think she's going to be one of these Amy Poehler type stars is
Wig.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But
she's very funny. Like, if you watch the variety of things she does in Saturday Night Live, she's very funny.
I tried to watch the one.
I can't watch the show anymore.
With Hugh Laurie,
I don't watch the show
we
anymore.
We just didn't watch
it. I see bits of it on Hulu. I generally watch the digital shorts.
Have you watched the Christopher Walken googly eye thing yet? Have you seen that yet?
No.
Okay, we'll have to check it out after this, because it is hilarious.
Have you seen the new Lonely Island song that they did?
Probably not.
There's been big buzz about it.
Okay, I'll have to check it out.
You won't have to censor this, though it is kind of foul. It's a song called Jizz in My Pants.
I only have to censor stuff where it's marginalizing women. Back to... I think I have to agree with you. The Rogan thing, it wears thinner. It doesn't work in a romance. like I said, it didn't work for me in Knocked Up. It doesn't work for me in Zack and Mary. But Jason Segel does, because, like you said, he's more earnest. He's more sincere. He actually puts himself out there. Rather than Rogan usually just has this obligatory, like...
And then he seems actually... Rogan, this isn't necessarily a problem, but it's something I don't find.
It's a problem in a romance where he's the lead.
Well, no, here's what I'm going to say. When he gets hurt by a woman or whatever, he hides it in sarcasm and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's fine. I don't find that personally endearing. Siegel character does what someone on It's Always Sunny would do, and he flips out. He loses his crap, and he decides he's going to go. And, you know, he goes to do the thing to get away from her. She's there, and he gets all mental because of it. And they did the great Apatow / McKay side character thing where you just throw funny characters in on the side and you know, you'll forget about any sort of lapses in stories like that. Because the main story is about an earnest person who's not intentionally funny with the hot chick, you know, and that's the basic main storyline. So you have to have the side characters be the funny ones. I understand that. And that's fine. That's how it used to be. And that's how it is in Forgetting Sarah Marshall as opposed to Superbad, Knocked Up, yada yada. Because... well, not so much 40-year-old Virgin, but Knocked Up, etc. Because 40-year-old Virgin...
He's sincere.
He's pathetic. He's never intentionally
funny. It's a romantic comedy...
Rogan says jokes. Yeah. His lines are jokes. And his character, you're meant to believe, is saying these jokes.
So he doesn't work as the romantic lead.
Exactly.
I agree with you on that, because it's always so false and contrived when just... obligatory scene of him at the end of the movie saying, well, you know what, okay, I do love you. He's still acting like he doesn't care and like he's sarcastic, and it's like, it never really works for the story, you know?
Right.
It works in a comedy. But you know what, that's why I'm like, you know what, throw the romance out of Zack and Mary, and it's a better movie because of it. It's less.
He was a revelation in 40-year-old Virgin.
Yeah, he was great in that.
Because that whole jokey sensibility where you know deep down, you know, he wants the love, and he's trying to be, you know, he is friendly. He's not off-putting as, like, an upsetting person or something like that. He's friendly. Yeah. His foul mouth and whatever.
Talking about grown weed and the corpses back when he worked at it.
Yeah, it's all friendly.
The morgue.
And, you know, he comes across as somebody you could be a good buddy with, but he is definitely not a lead. That's the thing. He's become one, and he's going to be in like the Green Hornet and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is supposed to be sort of more dramatic.
This is not just the year of Seth Rogen. This is the 4 years.
I was kind of put off by him when I saw him on a Daily Show interview. He just seemed kind of like, yeah, this is my real life. I just smoke weed and I'm an idiot and
I
dropped out of high school or whatever.
I understand.
And like, you know, look at me, I win. Yeah,
that's cool. But the fact that he brags about that is the thing that's off-putting.
That's what I mean.
Jokey part of it. Because anyone else would be like, if they mention that, he'd be kind of upset about it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's fine. I'd rather have someone be a little more pretentious than that. There's a lot of options here for a fifth one. There's various things that came out this year. Like I already said, Blindness and Appaloosa. There were some things that I found interesting, like Babylon AD, that isn't in no way a good film, but I found, you know, intriguing. And then there's the So Bad It's Good stuff. There's 88 Minutes. There's Righteous Kill. There was In the Name of the King, a dungeon siege tale. Recent Punisher 3, 2, I guess 3. I always want to call it Punisher 3, but it's Punisher Warzone. It's not really a So Bad It's Good thing. I just felt like the filmmakers knew that it was so tongue-in-cheek, and they made it over the top on purpose. There's stuff like that to throw out there. I think my fifth movie is going to be just something that I found very impressive, which was City of Ember. It comes from a not very well-known young adult series. Young adult is differentiated from children's series by the fact that at a reading level, it's more like 14, 15-year-old than something that a 10-year-old can read.
And the adults that ostensibly end up liking it.
Yeah, right.
Feel less like little kids.
Because it's got some it's got apocalyptic sci-fi stuff put in there.
What would the Hardy Boys be considered?
Hardy Boys is young adult.
Yes.
It is. Because every once in a while...
They're smugglers. They're all about smugglers.
They're smugglers.
They're all about smugglers,
there's
Dad.
There's counterfeiters. And there's people who steal art. I think. I don't know what else there was.
Dun, 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 dun.
They always get up a jam, though.
They do.
Frank. You know what? One thing that bothered me was that I think that in a show or a cartoon of the Hardy Boys I saw, they had their hair color wrong. That really bothered me. Frank was dark haired. Joe was toe headed. Hank's blonde.
Yeah, I know. From Venture Brothers.
Right.
Like and, Hank and Dean.
Exactly. And,
Venture Brothers.
I don't know. That bothered me. Anyway, City of Ember had very good acting. They did the wise thing when you're doing some sort of post-apocalyptic sci-fi thing is anyone who gets FaceTime in the film, make sure they have a weird-looking face. And they did that. They did that well. There's nobody who looks normal, and even the two leads, the girl's a little off kilter. She was very good. She was a very good actress. She plays the really kind of straight person. The guy's a lot more meaningful. Like he really wants to do something different than he is. But his face is kind of like he looks all haggard and crazy eyed. Bill Murray being a bad guy is a weird choice, and it really worked for this being a pseudo children's thing.
I felt like Bill Murray seems to me like the kind of guy I would be kind of afraid of in real life, because he's got that you just feel like something's going to crack at some point, you know. Yeah. So to me,
I wouldn't even want to hang out with him in the Caddyshack era.
Him being a bad guy seems like almost like yeah, that makes sense. Of course. What do you mean?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it worked for this because it's not a bad guy that you would hate so much. This is a very masterfully done, creepy, very well shot sci-fi-ish thing. The way it mixed these genres from children's thing to sci-fi to mystery, mm-hmm. To kind of like pseudo thriller type deal, where there's a lot of unknown out in the nether regions of this
giant beetles.
City. There's giant beetles. There's things. I mean. You don't ever see them. Though.
I forget. Are they establishing this as like potential for? Except they didn't make any money, so it's done, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it probably didn't.
It won't get its obligatory trade.
There's a sequel, then there's a prequel, and then there's a fourth book, which is the second sequel. It would be like a three in order. You know,
I get that.
That's the last one of the series that the lady wrote.
That kind of seems like an interesting
out. Yeah, and it's very interesting because it basically puts kids as protagonists every time, and they have to unravel some sort of mystery that tells them where they are, why they're there, what led to them being there as a society.
It's not a continuation of the same characters' storyline in the sequels?
The direct sequel is the same characters.
But part four...
Part three is a prequel set like... 100 years in the future, or 200 years in the future, something like that.
In the past. Yeah.
And then the fourth one, I think, is different characters. I could be wrong, though.
That's weird.
I
hate when they do that. When they build a world, and then they start developing characters in that world, and then they abandon those characters and go to different characters.
You know what's great about that, though, is that when you do that, and then you can bring in the other characters as side characters.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
Brad Easton Ellis has done that magnificently. American Psycho is about Patrick Bateman.
Mm-hmm.
His brother, I want to say it's Sean Bateman, is the character in, have you ever seen Rules of Attraction?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a weird movie.
That's Patrick Bateman's brother. That's the character, Patrick Bateman's brother.
Is the asshole that went to Europe?
Is James Vanderbeek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Vanderbeek is Bateman's brother. That's Sean.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's not the one that went to Europe. That's the one they're talking about the whole time, and then he shows
up. Yeah, then he shows up. He just, and they do that funny little thing where he talks about
how
many times he ejaculates and how his groin hurts and stuff like that. Yeah. they bring back... Ellis brought back Bateman in like three novels where like it's just like a stop-by-side character,
mm-hmm.
and he throws an air of like... craziness into the whole thing just because he stops by and says something or he's on a phone conversation. And then the most recent book he wrote is a weird pseudo-fictional thing about a character named Brad Easton Ellis who is a novelist who is working on his last gasp thing, and he's bisexual or he's actually gay, whatever. And then Patrick Bateman character that he wrote is a ghost to him that haunts him and tells him to do things. It's awesome. Like he's made this. Have you ever seen Less Than Zero?
Yeah,
that's Brad Easton Ellis. That's in this whole universe. Some characters from that appear in both movies.
Less Than Zero was
Andrew McCarthy.
Oh my god! And Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, that's in his universe. That's in the American Psycho universe.
Oh my god! Yeah. Wait, the is it called the Ellis verse?
Yeah, it's the Ellis verse. Yeah, it might be the Ellis verse.
No, I like that. I kind of like the in the Leonard verse where they had Michael Keaton come back as the ATF agent from Jackie Brown.
Yeah, totally.
And what was that one? It's the Soderbergh one.
Out of Sight.
Out of Sight.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
So anyway, the City of Ember just had such a great look to it. It felt kind of rushed in parts, but it was almost like a throwback to like a Jean-Pierre Jeunet type thing, but like without any sort of...
But it was City of Ember instead of City of Children.
Yeah, and it wasn't as meandering and artsy. It was just like, here's the awesome sets we built.
Let's watch a story unfold. Well,
let's watch a story in front of them instead of like, hey, here's some sets, and then here's some people saying things you don't understand.
Because it's in French.
Yeah, and here's some lame stuff about dreams and children, because that's really cool.
No, it's lame, like you just said. Yeah.
We're coming from the perspective here that we haven't seen these Oscar ones that are coming out.
Well, because we haven't. LA.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't at least. I haven't seen, I don't know, whatever else.
What was the most miserable failure of 2008 to you? Super obvious for me.
Well, you know, I would say something like Transporter 3, but that wasn't a failure because that's what that is.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Gosh, I'm trying to think of when I went into something and I just... Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Indiana Jones
and yes. The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Yeah.
We're on the same wavelength here.
Oh, man. I wonder if you took 45 minutes out of that movie, could it still... No?
If you rewrote it, reshot it.
That's the thing, too, because something about it was, like, blown out or bleached.
It looked weird.
Why didn't it look consistent?
Because they had a lot of CGI backgrounds in it. Like you were talking about earlier, when you have light reflecting off real things.
Why would Spielberg do that? Is he just lazy and old?
Who knows? Lazy and old. He wants to take advantage of this awesome new technology.
In an interview, special features of Temple of Doom, and he's talking about how he likes practical special effects and everything else.
Well, influence from Lucas, apparently.
I think in theory everybody does, but when it comes down to just getting it done quickly, it's like...
You can't really go to Mayan ruins. Yeah.
Well, you can. And if you're Spielberg, you fucking can.
If this movie had been good, not just successful, it made a decent amount of money. They're talking about making a fifth one, whatever.
Oh my god.
If it had been good...
That's not... No, I don't want... I'm going to cry.
Then 2008 could have been considered a fantastic year also because of the amount of massive... popcorn blockbusters that were so incredibly wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of balanced out things because there was a lot of middle ground.
Yeah, that's true.
There was a lot of middle ground
stuff. But did it have to rape our childhood?
Yeah.
Honestly, why couldn't Hulk have just been bad? Why did it have to be Indiana Jones?
Uh-huh. If Hulk was bad, you would have expected it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
I want Indiana Jones to be good.
I desperately wanted it to be good, but the whole time knew it most likely wasn't going to be. It's too long.
I felt like I was betraying something when I uttered to my friends as we were leaving the theater, that was awful. And they all laughed and agreed with me. Because,
it's too bad.
Because we were so psyched, and we were sitting there for the first half, something cool happened, and we were like, oh, cool. And looking at each other like for approval, like, right? Mm-hmm. That is cool, right? Afterwards... We all agreed that it was just utter filth. It was a cradle of filth.
Spelled with three Fs or something.
Yeah.
Oh,
man.
Oh.
Just bad.
Bitter taste.
Max Payne was pretty bad, too. But that was bad.
But you would expect that to be shit.
The Love Guru and Don't Mess with the Zohan were very bad.
I didn't see any.
This was a year of very bad movies. But there were some fantastic ones to offset them. And they were, like we said, they were blockbuster...
They were. There wasn't...
Popcorn and like, the way that comic book movies are going, they're becoming the big, new, good thing.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like, they've been... I would argue that the first two Spider-Mans were good too.
I loved the second one. The first one was pretty was
yeah, really the second great. One especially, yeah. And the first two X-Men movie. I mean, the second X-Men yeah. movie really. The
first one was kind of a misfire,
setting it up and everything, and the third one was crap. But yeah, I mean, it's like if you're going to talk about big adventure stories, then there you go. You've got comic books. You've got years worth of stories that are written relatively well because you can take. If you took 5% of the Batman universe, if you know, assume that 5% of that is good, mm-hmm. that's still like five movies it's worth five, of stuff. It's five movies, yeah. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. We could do that now. We could do our anticipation of the rest of 2008 and into 2009. Is Star Trek really going to be out in like 2 weeks? I thought it was Christmas, but now it seems to me like that can't be correct because there would be marketing everywhere.
I could swear that it was Christmas.
I remember the old, the one for Cloverfield, you know, the teaser said Christmas 08 or whatever, but now it just seems like we get a trailer on Bond and it's not, if it's coming out in 2 weeks, then they should have it on TV too.
Right. I don't think that's accurate.
They must have changed. They must have bumped it. I'll bet they bumped it to summer. Though maybe not. I don't know. I am kind of looking forward to it. Mainly because I'm excited about Simon Pegg. And from the trailer, just from that one brief moment, I'm excited about, what's his name? Carl Urban.
Yeah.
As McCoy. He's like, everything's dangerous out here. Yeah. And it's like, that's... I'm kind of thinking it's going to be terrible, though, based on, like, the one scene where it's, like, Kirk and Spock, and he said, like, why don't you do something about it? And then Spock's like, I'm going to get into a fight with you now. And it's like, really?
The one thing I'll say is that I kept, every time I've seen a trailer, I knew when they hired Chris Klein, I was like, oh, it's one of those, you know, one of those guys. Mm-hmm. And
he's Kirk.
I kept thinking, yeah, he's Kirk.
Has he done anything?
I kept thinking, I've seen this guy somewhere.
Yeah.
I totally have seen this guy somewhere. And I saw something that reminded me of what it was earlier today. Did you see Smoke and Aces?
No, I heard about it. It's awful. Yeah,
he plays the one funny character in it, which is there's these like there's these Dutch or something hitmen who are all brothers. And he's the leader of them, and he speaks with an American Western accent from old Westerns because that's all he's ever watched. Uh-huh. And he calls everyone partner and like, but he's.
I think I need to watch. I think I will love. I think I will love this movie.
It's stupid. It's really awful. You won't like it. But he.
How could I not like it with all the weird stuff?
And he's got this weird like mohawk that falls down half of his face. And yeah, and he was the guy in that. And I was like, because I was reading something. I was like, Chris Klein from this. And he played the love interest in this. He played the love interest in this, like romantic comedies. And then he straddled Ben Affleck in Smoke and Aces. And I was like, that's where it was. I knew it. And not to give anything away, but Ben Affleck is a very short side character.
And then
killed very quickly. And then the Chris Klein character sits on his chest and he says, like, I'm sorry I had to kill you. And then he takes Ben Affleck's mouth and goes, it's okay. I forgive you. I know you're doing this for good reasons. And he's like, oh, thanks. I really appreciate you telling me that. But what's funny is that he's talking with this, like, American accent in movies, and his brothers can't speak English. Like, it's great. It's great. It's really weird.
I think I'm going
to you might have to watch it.
I might have to.
It kind of sucks, but you might have to watch
it. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I've been pretty happy with Abrams' stuff. He's a pretty decent action director. MI3 was good. Right. The stuff he did in Alias was good. I'm still not sure about Watchmen, what's going to happen with that. Like I said, they just keep marketing it to look like this giant, crazy, what's going on, things are exploding. But every single bit of action has pretty much already been shown, you know? It's like Home Alone. They're going to show you all the traps in the movie, in the trailer, and then you go watch the movie and you're like, oh, you get us the, oh, it was two paint cans, not one. That said, Home Alone is a great movie.
It is.
Fantastic. I saw the second one.
It's Chris Columbus.
Twice in the same day.
Really?
Yeah, like I watched, my mom rented it and I watched it by myself and then like,
Star my Trek dad comes my out brother,
in May.
Yeah.
Bullshit. It was supposed to come out on Christmas.
Christmas, The Wrestler comes out in New York and LA.
I want to see The Wrestler. Oh, that reminds me of more things to anticipate for 2008.
I want to see The Wrestler. I want to see Gran Torino.
Gran Torino. I want to see Slumdog Millionaire.
Yes.
Yeah. I will kick myself if I don't get to see those three movies.
There's probably some more out there. But that, yeah, those are the ones that I'm thinking
God, that thing's going to town.
Yeah, well, it's because I loaded up Rotten Tomatoes and there's about 17,000 ads on it.
Oh, God. That stuff getting obnoxious.
Christmas also is Benjamin Button. I did want to see that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where... I still haven't seen Zodiac.
You haven't seen that?
No.
Just I don't, rent it, dude.
I'm going to. I'm just going to... I waited before because there was going to be the big director's cut official version delay thing. Now that's probably all sorted out, so I just need to go find the find it and devote an entire evening to it because it's probably like a 4-hour movie if it's a director's cut or whatever. Yeah. I don't know what with Benjamin Button though. Anyway, I think 08 was good. I think you're right. 09 had 09 was the year of actually or 07 was the year of actually fun to watch, entertaining Oscar caliber movies.
Yeah,
with
right.
No Country for Old Men and
There Will Be Blood.
There Will Be Blood. I mean, those are movies I actually liked.
And that differentiates most years because generally, this year is more like most years in that there's a handful of Oscar-worthy stuff at the end and some indie film wins it, and then everything else is a fun big blockbuster that you remember.
But this year, fun big blockbusters are like, they're talking about Oscars for those.
Right,
I mean, it's all pretty much a joke, but... It's like those were actually good, fun movies.
Exactly.
I can't think of too many of the quote unquote award caliber movies that I've even seen or that I would care to see. Usually they're just like boring dramas. I don't know. It doesn't do it for me most of the time. Or I'm not interested enough to sit and watch it. Like something like The English Patient. I really don't care. You know.
I don't either. I've attempted to do it before, but I can't do it. I'm probably gonna watch Magnum Force tonight.
Yeah, I'm gonna do that. Mark's got all those, so I think we're gonna do the Dirty Harry series.
I just watched Dirty Harry 2 nights ago. It's actually the first time I've ever seen it all the way through.
I've never seen it all the way through. I don't think I've seen any of them all the way through, but so I'm gonna do those. Maybe in preparation for Dirty Harry 6.
Right.
Otherwise known as Gran Torino.
Racist Harry.
Get the hell off my lawn.